and tonight I'm joined by Karen and Marima. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
So how are you ladies doing?
Better than Marima. Oh.
I know. Marima's a little bit under the weather.
I'm just losing my voice, which some people I'm sure would be grateful. So, you know, no worries.
It'll be all right. So what have you guys been reading? Karen, have you been reading anything fantastic this last week?
Yes, actually. I read a book called Queen of Hearts. That's the name of the series. And the first book in the series is called The Crown. And it started off kind of slow, and I wasn't sure I was really liking it, but I hit about halfway through it, and it got really, really good. And I'm really excited for the sequel now. And basically, it's sort of like a twisted fairy tale, kind of. It's basically the backstory to the Queen of Hearts, and it kind of shows how she goes from this sort of naive princess that most of the kingdom doesn't really like to eventually, obviously, a villain in the sort of like Alice in Wonderland story. And so, I don't know. I think the first book was really good and ended at a really interesting spot. So I'm really curious what's going to happen in the second book. And I also really want to know how they're going to make her into a villain, and if by the end of the book series, you're going to hate her, or if you'll actually kind of still like her. I don't know. I think it's going to be really cool how they handle that. And then the other book that I'm reading right now is called Firstborn, and about halfway through with that one, and it's about this girl who basically, she's declared male, which means that she has to live her life as a boy, and she wears this amulet that suppresses all of her, like, femininity. So she actually really does kind of live like a boy, except she starts getting her period, and she starts like growing breasts and stuff and becoming a girl, and it kind of like plays havoc with this identity that she's had her whole life. And aside from that, it's also about these birds that they call it twining, and basically they become like really, really close, and they can almost read each other's minds and stuff like that. And it's just, it's kind of complicated. I'm not really sure where the book's going just yet, but so far it's pretty interesting, and I definitely want to see how it's going to end.
That is fascinating, I guess. I'm like, I'm trying to find the right word. Like, up until you mentioned the bird part, I was like, oh yeah, because I've heard of Firstborn. She was meant to live like a boy because of the society she lives in, correct?
Yeah, it's all about killing, like, you either have to give up your firstborn female, which means that she dies, or you declare them male, and they have to actually live their life as a boy.
Okay, that's interesting.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The Queen of Hearts one sounds really cool, though.
Yeah, like I said, it was kind of rocky at first, but now I'm, like, super invested, and I really can't wait until the second book.
Excellent. Marima, have you been reading anything exciting this week?
I wouldn't call it exciting, but I did read The One by Kira Cass, mainly because I've stuck with that series this far. And I actually was really hoping that it would go in a different direction to the one it went in. Have you read it yet, Jen?
No.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it, but I guess I was hoping it would be a little more critical of certain elements that were introduced in earlier books, and it wasn't. It just kind of kept going, so that was a shame. In hindsight, probably that wasn't a great series for me. But yeah, that's kind of all at the moment.
Yeah, I sadly did not get to read as much as I wanted to this week. And I had such good plans for last weekend that fell right through about sitting and reading and doing nothing. And that never, ever happened. Yeah. I know. I was so excited. I know, it didn't happen. But this week, The Lovely and the Lost by Paige Morgan comes out. And it's the second novel in the Dispossessed series. The first one was The Beautiful and the Cursed. And it's some, like, gargoyle mythology that's really, really cool. So I'm very excited to read that one. And then I'm excited because Tuesday, We Were Liars comes out. And I need everyone to read it as soon as Tuesday hits. That's,
oh
like, a
rule.
Oh, my God,
I forgot. I forgot that wasn't out yet. Everyone, no, quit your job and read We Were Liars.
Dude, just take an extra long lunch break. You don't even have to quit your job. It's really not that long.
It's really short.
Okay,
yeah.
We're not as fast as you guys.
No, it's really short.
It's like only 128 pages.
Yeah.
I think if what the one that I got, if it's bound correctly, it's only 128 pages.
Yeah, mine was an A1, so I'm not sure, but it was really short.
Yeah, well,
it's
mine
like
was
Gatsby short.
Yeah, mine was an E1 too, and it was, but the like they were the pagination looked correct, so
yeah,
it was 128
I was,
pages.
I think that looked like it was set out right. I think that was right.
Yeah, so like I'm saying, it really isn't that long. Like, it's like literally you sit down and you read it, and you're going to want to. You're not going to want to put it down. So
anyway, Karen, you have to read it for next week. So
yep.
No, I didn't realize it wasn't out yet. I was actually going to order it soon, and then I guess it's a good thing that I didn't yet.
Tuesday, it comes out Tuesday, which is super exciting, because I can't wait to, like, talk to other people about it. Like, Merriman and I have talked about it, but I'm like, I can't tell you anything about it because, well, I can't. It would ruin it. And I don't want anyone to be spoiled. Like, you just need to sit and read it and, like, love it for what it is. So
just read it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's so good. So it'll be interesting. I can't wait to see everyone's reaction after they've read it this week. Hopefully it'll be good. So those two come out this week, and I'm really excited about both of those books. They both are just so exciting. Anyway, so moving on from that, let's talk about some news that just popped up. Speaking of CaraCast, you mentioned The One, which was the last book in the selection trilogy, and she just announced the day after it came out that she's going to do a prequel novella called The Queen. Interestingly, it's about Queen Amberlee, and it's going to be about her rise to queen and her selection process. And Kira Cass actually did a guest post for us regarding Amberlee, so it was really interesting when this news hit that she had just literally like written a guest post for us regarding Amberlee and, you know, kind of what she has been up to and why she enjoys Amberlee so much. So it'll be interesting to see what that novella holds and what Amberlee's rise to the selection during the selection process looked like, because she describes her being very different from America. So kind of curious to see how that will play itself out.
Are you actually going to read it though? Because I'm definitely not.
It depends. It's short.
Yeah,
if it's a novella, it's not going to be that long. We'll see.
I feel like the only way that this can work is by making it so the king used to be a good guy but turned into a horrible guy at some point. I feel like his behavior shouldn't be excused.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. Definitely.
But I feel like that's the only way that this is going to work, because otherwise it's like, why did you want to end up with this jerk?
Yeah. Unless it's some oddly construed power play on her part, but still
maybe
disturbing.
I'm just like somewhat bitter towards this series at the moment, so
yeah, you're fresh off that read of
right,
you know,
yeah,
that happens. That's the worst when that happens, when you get to that third book or fourth book and you read it and you're like, what
yeah, and then you're like, why did I stick with this?
Yeah, see, I'm a little concerned. Like, I've been reading The Raven Cycle by Maggie Stiefvater, and I loved the first two books. Loved them. But I'm a little concerned about the third book. Like, I just don't know where she's going to go with it, and it makes me super nervous.
Right. I think the worst bit is when you have, like, a definite hope for what you think is going to happen, which is what I thought Selection was hopefully building to, and it wasn't. And I'm not saying it was bad, because a lot of people love the Selection series, but it's definitely not one that I would typically read for my personal like views on life and women. But that was a shame.
Yeah, I was surprised when you said you were reading it, because it's not your typical type of novel. I was like, you're what?
Yeah, so the first so what I really was interested in it was I guess like the world I found really interesting, and all the rebels and everything, I found that really interesting, and I was sort of hoping it would go in a different direction with the impact that it would have on I guess the selection process, and maybe she would be a little more critical of like this incredibly sexist thing that was at the center of her books, but she really wasn't. And it looks like she's just going to cash in on it with this. So, I mean, power to her. People like it. It's just not really for me.
Yeah, understandable. All right, so moving on to some other news that we talked about last weekend. We talked about the diversity in books, the We Need Diverse Books campaign that happened in a response to the Book Blogger Con that was announced. Or not Book Blogger Con, excuse me, Book Con. So Book Con is the, like, Power Reader Day. It's open to the public, and it's the last day of BEA. And they announced this ridiculously large panels of authors and celebrities that are going to be there on this Book Con Day. And interestingly, there were 30 authors, and all of them were white. There was no diversity in the author panel whatsoever. And there was one cat. So, like, there were comments being made about that. And we talked about that. And so this campaign called We Need Diverse Books kind of popped up in a response to the lack of diversity at BookCon. And so it's kind of resolved itself. It was all over Twitter in a matter of, like, hours. And it is definitely an important topic to talk about, because it doesn't feel like it happens. Like, I'm trying to find the right way to word this, because I messed it up last week, I think, when I was trying to talk about it. I don't think people always consider diversity in books, because you read them, you're not seeing them, so it's a little bit different. So I think as a reader, sometimes you just picture the person in your head that you feel fits. So that person could look like anything. So I think sometimes people don't consider diversity the way they should in a book, like they would on TV. So I think this campaign was super important, and it actually got some results. So what they've done is they've added a diversity panel to the BookCon lineup. So on that panel are going to be acclaimed children's authors Grace Lin. She wrote Where the Mountain Meets the Moon. Matt De La Pena, who wrote The Living, and Jacqueline Woodson, who wrote Miracle Boys. And they will speak on a panel regarding that. So that's really good that BookCon was kind of listening and paying attention to the response that people gave them, and did kind of make an effort to meet them halfway, I think, or an eighth of the way, really, because one panel, I guess it's a start, but you would hope that they could have done more. So what do you guys think about that?
I just feel like at that point, they didn't really have a choice. You know, it doesn't feel so much like BookCon is saying it's a really important thing that they should have done in the first place. It just feels like, yeah, now it's been so much criticism about their decision that they were stuck, you know, like they had to do something. And like you said, it's one panel. It's really not enough, which is a shame. It would have been good if they had put together a few things. I think they still have time, and lots of people would have been eager to be involved, I think. So, you know, I hope that the discussion doesn't stop here, because they've begrudgingly given people one single panel talking about this.
I don't think it will stop here. This isn't the first time there's been a diversity in YA campaign. I know that for a while, Melinda Lowe was doing a whole, I believe she runs a website called Diversity in YA, and they did an enormous book tour with lots of with diverse authors, with authors who had lots of diversity within their books, just kind of highlighting it all. And they did this really great book tour that people could go to that had lots of different people who, you know, either had diverse books or were diverse authors. So I think it's there. It's just not always and maybe as noticeable as this campaign was. This campaign really kind of took off quite quickly. So I'm hoping that it doesn't just end, and that people are more aware of when they're selecting panels and when they're selecting authors to come and speak, that they need to kind of maybe look at who they're selecting and why they're selecting them and what topics they're selecting to talk about. So
yeah, so the Pemberley Digital, who are the production company that made Lizzie Bennet Diaries and are currently doing Emma Approved, just announced their new series this week. And I think Karen is already its number one fan, because they're going to be adapting Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and they're doing it with PBS Digital Studios. So what they have said about it is the series reimagines the title character as a Victoria Frankenstein, an obsessive, eccentric prodigy determined to prove herself in the male-dominated fields of science and medicine. So it's they're gender-bending the role, which is really interesting. And they're expecting the series to premiere later this year in the fall. But that's kind of all we know about it at the moment. But that's exciting stuff, I think. Karen, do you have opinions?
I do. I mean, right now I'm kind of like, I don't really know how I feel about it because we don't know a lot about it. But I agree. I think gender bending the role of Frankenstein is really cool. And I think, you know, they've done so well bringing these other stories into the modern age that I think that it has the potential to be really, really cool. And I'll definitely be tuning in and checking it out. You know, whether or not it's actually going to be able to pull off what it wants to do is another thing entirely, but I have faith, and I think hopefully a lot of people at least check out the first few episodes, and we'll kind of like have to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, what I'm most interested to see is how are they going to do the monster. Like, I have no idea how that's going to work.
That'll be really interesting. But I love the idea of gender bending the main role and, like, making it, like, I don't know, just different. Because every Frankenstein I think we've ever come across has been a male. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that and how they change it all up. Now, is it going to be contemporary or is it going to be set? We don't know.
Oh, well, they haven't said, but I mean, yeah. I feel like at this point you can assume it's going to be modern adaptation. Yeah, so I guess the interesting thing is what they're focused on so far is like it's this idea of this woman in this male-dominated field, which is I guess more in line with Mary Shelley than it is really with Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's kind of credited with creating the science fiction genre and she often gets forgotten for that, I think. So that's a nice harking back to that. At the same time, I hope it doesn't take away from all of the things that are talked about in Frankenstein, because this kind of isn't one of them.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
a cool twist, but yeah. I get, like Karen said, we're not going to know until they start showing us what's happening. So
exactly. No, but I like this idea. Are there any other things that you guys think that would be cool, like any other classics that would be cool to see kind of played out in a modern way? Because we've had the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. We now have this Frankenstein ND. Like, can you guys think of anything else that you'd be like, oh, yeah, that would be a really cool kind of adaptation that we may not have seen before, or like take on a traditional story?
I feel like you can do it with, well, any of the like Jane Austen-y type. They will all work fine because of the subject matter. The romantics are a little bit more difficult. So, you know, like Jane Eyre and things like that, they're a bit...
Yeah. People can't really hide their wives in the attic anymore. It doesn't exactly work.
Because they're so heightened in the story, like it's more difficult to translate those elements. But you know what I always wanted to see was like a web series adaptation of Narnia where they did like vlogs. I'm serious. Where they did vlogs that like, oh my God, guys, like you will not believe what just happened to me today. You know,
that would be super funny.
I would really like that actually.
Right? I feel like it would be so fun. And, you know, you could get around a lot of the, like, special effects budget by just talking about it and not showing it. And you could even, like, they could film it in the room where the wardrobe is. So, you know, you could have characters, like, coming back through the wardrobe into our world versus, like, the other way. Then they could show up on the vlog. I always just thought that would be really fun. I don't know why that one specifically.
That is pretty entertaining, actually. I kind of like that idea.
If someone wants to run with that, please feel free to credit me 100%.
You're like, ah, you accept credit. Yeah. So, Karen, yep. Is there anything you could think of that might be of interest to be a web series?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think you can really do it with anything, I think. And it could be really cool, depending on how you decide to twist it and update it. I think that... a modern day version of, see, a lot of these are a bit darker, I think, than some of the ones that we've seen in the past. A lot of the ones, I mean, I haven't watched the Lizzie Bennet Diaries or Emma Approved or anything like that, but they seem to be comedies, or at least partially comedies. And I think a lot of the ones that I would be really interested in would be a lot darker than that. But I think, like, I've always loved 1984, and I think that it's already sort of like a futuristic type story. that it could be cool to do some sort of web series with that, or even like, I don't know how they would do it, but like Lord of the Flies, I think would be really awesome.
Oh my. Oh my
God. Just because I love Lord of the Flies.
Oh, Lord of the Flies, 100%. And I can't remember when we were talking about it, but I think it was during the Lizzie Bennet Diaries that I was asking, when I was doing all these interviews with the creators, like, what would they really like to adapt if they didn't have to worry about? Because obviously a lot of it depends on what's in the public domain. And they were like, Lord of the Flies would be so fun to do. And I was like, oh my God, yes. And I haven't given up on that dream yet. But 1984 would be perfect. And, you know, the other one that would be really good would be Catcher in the Rye, because it's essentially like just an internal monologue anyway.
I was just thinking that would, yeah.
That would be fantastic. I would love to see that. I feel like there's a lot with sort of modern dystopian, not like Hunger Games dystopian, but like 1984 dystopian. There is a lot of possibilities there. But again, it's that whole like copyright thing. So, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, public domain can be tricky because you have to wait, because sometimes they can re-up their like stuff on it and you can't do a public domain. I don't know. It's so we'll see. That would be cool though. I really like those ideas, especially anything that like Catcher in the Rye that has that internal monologue that basically is the basis of the story. It's way easier to play with than something that's a little more interactive, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll have to see what else I can come up with, because so far they've had some pretty pretty cool ideas. I like
it. Yeah, the good thing about it is that they've kind of spawned this genre of literary adaptations. Like there's a Jane Eyre one, the autobiography of Jane Eyre, I think it's called. And there was a recent one of Edgar Allan Poe. Like, it's just all these random things that you would not think would work. There's a Little Women one. Like, there's a lot out there if people are interested in that.
Well, now that you've mentioned that they'd like to do Lord of the Flies, I'm not going to stop until that happens. Like, that would be so awesome.
Right? All right. I'll get on it for you, Karen.
Yes, Karen's article for next week, why the Lord of the Flies would make a fantastic web series. And go.
I might actually do that.
See?
Karen, I'm commissioning you. Do it.
Sometimes you have to inspire those around you, Karen. You have to just be like, so, I'm putting it out there. All right. One last bit of news item. As I was going through some things today, I saw this pop up. It seems that A Curious Case of the Dog in the Night has been banned in a Tennessee school district. It's by British author Mark Haddon. It's a curious incident of a dog in the nighttime. Did I say that? Did I say that wrong? No. Anyway, either way, the Tennessee school district has banned it, and they're saying that it's been pulled because of its profanity. It was on a 9th grade reading list, and it's about an autistic teenager investigating the death of a neighbor's dog. So here's my thing. A, book banning is kind of ridiculous to me in the first place, but if you're going to ban a book for profanity, does that mean you're censoring what's on TV? Because can I tell you that TV lately, just regular old like ABC, NBC, CBS, the language on those shows that have been on those channels lately has actually, like, I was surprised at what they're getting away with, quite like, frankly, because it's not anything that used to be allowed before on TV. So if it's, you're worried about profanity, like, how bad is it when you can get to that on any like regular TV channel, never mind what you'll find on like cable. So like, if it's really just about the profanity, I don't know, I find that very strange.
Yeah, it's, book banning is like not okay, I think, in any circumstances. And usually whatever reason they use is just like a scapegoat for the fact that some parent doesn't want their kid to read the book, or doesn't want someone else's kid to read the book even. I don't know, your school system is really weird. Like, that doesn't go down so much in Australia.
Yeah, but it's not about the, see, it falls under the Constitution on various levels. People say it's this freedom or that, like, they'll pick a freedom and they'll apply it to it because it suits their purpose. Like, it's such a confusing thing to me, because I don't understand why a parent would feel that they are allowed to tell other parents what their kids should and shouldn't be reading. I understand if it's a personal choice for the parent fine, you can tell your child not to read that book. But the second you say, no, you can't read that book, you know they're going to go find it somewhere, right? Like, that's right, my thing. No. I'm like, as soon as you say no, that's the indication that, oh, there's something taboo in there and I'm going to get my hands on it even faster now.
Yeah, I just think book banning is, like, super dangerous. What I meant was that in Australia, like, parents don't have that level of control over the school curriculum like they seem to in America, which I think is where a lot of the problem comes from. Like you said, parents saying, like, oh, no, I don't think that this is a good idea, and then suddenly, like, no kid at that school can read it.
Yeah, it's very tricky. It doesn't happen so much. It happens in certain regions more than others, I think. And those regions typically have vastly different views on things than others. So I think
that was very diplomatic.
Thank you. I've been working on that. Thank you. So it's, yeah. So I don't know. Like, I've never had an issue where we've banned books anywhere up where I'm living in New England. And honestly, like, I worked at a library for as a young adult librarian for quite a while, and I would have people, like, somebody actually came in and started to give me a hard time about the Harry Potter books, like, what, like, and this was only like a year ago, and I kind of just looked at them, I'm like, uh-huh, okay, do you know? Yes, I know, I've read every single one of them, I absolutely know what's in those books. And they kind of just were appalled, and I'm like, you don't have to read it. Like, you made the effort to come on the children's side of the library to go over to the shelf to point the book out to me. Like, no one's saying you have to touch it or read it, so what's your problem? But if you think I'm taking it off the shelf because you're complaining, you're out of your mind. Like, and I had a couple people that would do that. Like, I would have adults that would come into the young adult section and, like, pull books off the shelf. This book has curse words in it. And I'm thinking, yeah, you didn't really flip that many pages because it also has sex in it, but I'm not going to tell you that part. You know, like, pick your battles. Do you think that teenagers don't curse? Because if you do, I think you're slightly confused. So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get why you feel you can assert your choices over someone else, because that's exactly why our Constitution was written in a lot of ways. So it always baffles me when we see the different, like, things pop up about, you know, books being banned in this school district or this book being banned in that school district. And honestly, as a teacher, if someone tried to tell me what I could and couldn't teach in that regard, it would be really hard for me. Like, I don't get it. Like, if one parent didn't want me to teach a book to their child, we would find an alternative, but I wouldn't let them dictate what I can teach in my whole classroom. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to infringe on anyone's personal beliefs, but at the same time, you're not going to infringe on my educational duties either.
Right. Yeah. So I think with this book in particular, like, I read this when I was in high school, and it was one of those books that really, really stuck out to me. It's such an interesting book. And, you know, if anybody out there hasn't read it yet, go and pick it up, because even though it's on a ninth grade reading list and you think, oh, you know, I'm above that if you're a lot older or whatever, like, I think that there's so much in that book that can speak to people who are young adults and adults and everything. And it really opened my eyes. And it was just one of the few books that I read in high school that really stuck with me. And I think it's really sad when parents want to take those opportunities away from other children, whether it be their own or other people's children, because okay, yeah, it has swear words. Maybe that's not the greatest thing for, you know, say a ninth grader to read, although I doubt they haven't seen any of those things before. But I think if you can't look past the profanity and actually see what the book is supposed to be about and what it's supposed to be teaching children, that's the saddest part of it, because the Curious Incident of the Dog in Nighttime is just, it's so good and it's so different than so many other books that I've read. And I think that's why it really stuck out to me, that I would hate for other kids to totally miss out on it because their parents don't want them to read swear words.
Yeah, and I would disagree and say that I really didn't like that book, but you should still have the right to read it if you want to.
Yeah.
So, and make up your own mind.
And it had nothing to do with the swear words.
I promise that it didn't, although they were very shocking to me. Not reels.
I was like, was that a joke?
I know, I'm like, what?
I never curse.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I laugh?
Guys, you're ruining my reputation.
Oh, I don't think that's
I'm pretty sure you've dropped an F-bomb on here once or twice before.
No, that anyway. That was Danielle.
Oh, was it?
Yes. The first time Danielle came on, she dropped an F-bomb. And she's like, oh, can I say that? Miriam was like, that is staying in there. If that gives you any indication.
Yeah, good times.
All right, moving on. Marima is going to give us now her favorite books because she's not getting out of that torturous endeavor. So, favorite book series, top three.
Oh, my God.
Books, top three. Bring it.
It was so mean. It was so mean. But I did think about it a lot because I wanted to do it, and then it was really hard. I know that you guys kind of did, like, the parallel universe versions of your favorite books that like didn't include the ones you always talk about, but whatever, I don't stick to those rules. So in no particular order, my three favorite books would be To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee and The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. And
the book thief.
No, actually. And it would be either The Piper's Son or Saving Francesca, or On the Jellicoe Road by Melina Marchetta. And then the honorable mention would be The Book Thief. And that, like, the reason that the Marchetta one is more than one is because, I guess because I love those books so much, and maybe you guys have an author like this as well, I kind of go through cycles of which one I like the most, and it just sort of depends on my own, I guess, emotions and like what I'm feeling. That depends like which one I relate to the most at a different point, because they're all so good. So yeah, that would be favorite books. And then favorite series is actually even harder. I don't know, this is really hard. Harry Potter, of course, and then His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, which I haven't, like, gone on and on about this like I have with all my other favorite books, but, I mean, if you're at all interested in, like, science fiction or fantasy or high literature or, like, theology or philosophy or coming of age or witches or like any of these things, you should read that series. It's amazing. It's so amazing.
Just go watch the movie.
It's the worst movie in the world. And then my third favorite series would be Lord of the Rings. And then my honorary mention would be The Lumiere Chronicles by Melina Marchetta. So, yeah, I feel like that didn't surprise anyone. No. But it was really hard for me.
You have to narrow it down. It's always tough picking.
Yeah, it's really mean. Such a mean question.
It is. Well, we have another one from the same person. And this week they want to know, who are our favorite literary characters of all time?
Jen, why don't you go first?
Because I don't know any.
I don't know. Well, okay. One of my favorite characters is Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
Because have you guys read that book? It's like,
yeah, we have. It's required reading here.
Oh,
like,
okay.
For the most part, like in school, it's required reading.
Right. Yeah, that's weird as well. Okay. So I didn't read it at school, but yeah, I love that book so much. This is so hard. I can't do like a definitive list. I'm just going to say anyone that comes into my head. So Hermione Granger, she would have to be up there for sure. She's amazing. You know who? Matilda. Do you guys read Matilda?
Yeah.
I love that book. Her power is like reading lots of books. It's amazing. Like a superpower. I don't know. Karen, you do some.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely have to say Hermione Granger, because she's just such an awesome role model for girls and nerds in particular. I actually really like Eustace from the Chronicles of Narnia because he, and I almost said Lucy, but then I remembered how much Eustace changed over the course of the books that he was in, and I was always just really struck by how completely his personality changed and what a good person he became in the end. So I really liked that. And this might be a weird one, but not necessarily a surprise. I also really like Frankenstein's monster because I think just who he ended up being and all of the thoughts that he had in his head was just, I don't know, it really stuck out to me and I thought it was so interesting and I just really want to read that book again.
That is a weird answer. Oh,
That
wait, I have another one.
okay, go
Another
for it.
one is Isabeau from Finnegan of the Rock / the Lumineer Chronicles, but I just really like her in Finnegan of the Rock especially. That's a Melina Marqueta book too. This is hard. I can't do three. I'm just looking at my bookshelf for inspiration.
Yeah, it's really hard because I look at my bookshelf. I'm like, oh, I like that one. Oh, but I was like, oh, maybe that one. Like, I can't narrow it down.
I think
It's
I have to
tricky.
say, like, I'm not really a person that has favorite characters in that sense. I have a lot of favorite books, but there aren't a lot of characters that I could be like, wow, that's my favorite character for, this reason, because I guess that's not why I read books, Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
I
Like, I
think we've
read.
had this conversation before.
Yeah, I need the whole
Yeah.
context of the story and the writing and, everything, not just, I can't just pull a character out and say, they're my favorite. Even someone like Hermione, like in the abstract, Hermione's great, but I think a lot of what I like about Hermione depends on like reading, actually reading about her. So not just thinking about her. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I'm sticking to because it means I don't have to give a definitive answer.
You're like, it's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Outsmarted, yeah.
Yeah, good try. No, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to identify. Like, I love reading about characters but and how they develop more than just the, do you know what I mean? Like, I like the journey of the character and how they change throughout that journey, not just who they are on the page. So it's kind of like what you're saying in
Yeah.
a sense. Yeah.
All right. Just hijack my answer, why don't you?
Hey, you do it to me all the time. No. So yeah, so I don't know, but it's something like that. Like it's more than just who they are on the page, but it's hard to explain. Like my favorite Jane Austen character, I think, is probably Fanny Price. And I know that's weird, but it's also one of Mansfield Park is one of my favorite Jane Austen books. And I know it people don't normally like that one, but for some reason I just do. So yeah, I don't know. And I do like Hermione a lot, just because of how she develops over those 7 books and who she becomes and how she finds herself in a lot of different ways is a really good story in itself. So I enjoy that as well.
Yeah, I want to read the Hermione Granger series from her point of view.
It would be so different.
She would just be like, boys are so dumb. Like, why
Yeah.
is it so dumb? Except me, I am super smart.
So yeah, I don't know. This one's really hard. I have to think about it. Maybe next week we'll have better answers.
Yeah.
But this week I really am not. I'm having trouble
We
picking.
need more time.
We need to process. And the next one was our favorite literary settings, both realistic and fictional. Do you guys have any that you're just like, yes?
No.
You're
Yes.
like, no.
I don't care. I really don't have a preference.
See, I liked reading when I read Anna and the French Kiss. I liked seeing Paris through Anna's eyes. Like, I liked Anna's Paris because I've not, like, it's one of the few places in Europe that I haven't been. Like, I've been up to a lot of the big cities in the major countries, but I haven't been to Paris.
You
And like,
serious?
yeah, I haven't been
When?
to Paris and I haven't been to Rome. Those are
On a
the,
plane.
I know. But I have been to Australia, so that's gotta count for something, right?
Well, I live in Australia and I can tell you that Paris and Rome are both better.
Yeah, no, I know. I get it, but yeah, I just haven't been there. So reading Anna and the French Kiss and seeing Paris through Anna's eyes was just, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I thought that was cool. So that's a realistic setting that living in Anna's world, I would love to experience Paris that way because it's so different. than being the, like, ultimate tourist. Like, going and living in a place and not knowing the language and stuff is terrifying, first of all. But it's just, I don't know, I think it's really cool as well. Like, I went and I lived in Australia for a while, but you speak the language, like, we speak the same language, so it's not nearly as frightening, I don't think, as when you don't.
I was going to joke about we don't speak English, but I feel like I've filled my quota for making fun of Australia on this episode already.
Yeah. I think you've done it. You've done it some justice. Other than that, I don't know. So Karen, what about you? Where were your favorite fictional places?
I guess I'm the only one that did my homework, you guys, but you know, that probably isn't a surprise either.
I'm the teacher.
I'm like, she says to the two grad school students who do homework all the time.
It's fine. Book type homework.
Okay. We don't have time for book type homework.
All right. Well, the first one I picked was Wonderland because I just think, like, it's so whimsical and you can do so many things with it. And I'm not just thinking about, like, the original Wonderland that you see in the Alice in Wonderland books, but even some of the other iterations. And this is probably coming from reading Queen of Hearts, because I think, like, that author chose to take it a little bit darker and creepier. And I just love everything that you can do with the idea of Wonderland, because pretty much anything is possible. And then the other one I chose was The Great Tree of Avalon, which is actually the name of the book, too. And that's by T.A. Barron. I talked about it last time. And that one is so cool because there are seven root realms of this tree. And it's really hard to explain, and even after reading the series, I'm not sure I totally get it, but each root is an actual, like, country, you could say, and people live there, and then you can travel up the tree, and people live in the tree and on the tree branches, and there are all these little, like, worlds within this one giant tree. And I think that is so interesting, and how the world sort of expands over the series of the books is one of the coolest things that I've ever read. So I that one always sticks out in my head. And then I also really like Lilliput, which is from Gulliver's Travels. And I don't know why, but I've always been kind of obsessed with it since I was little. And I think I just thought the idea of, like, little horses and little people was, like, really cool. And I always wanted, like, a little animal to, like, stick in my pocket. I don't know. So that was my third one.
That's really
all right.
Funny.
I'm going to say some because I just thought of something that I do like, because I just talked about it, which is His Dark Materials. The world in that is really cool because it parallel universes, and I'm not going to spoil it because it, you know, things happen to do with that. But yeah, there are these, like, windows in the air where you can, like, kind of jump through into a different world. And I always found that really fun. And I guess I do like fantasy books that have, like, multiple universes, because there is a Diana Wynne Jones book called The Merlin Conspiracy, which was the kind of sequel companion book to another book she wrote, which I think was called Deep Secret. Don't hold me to that. I'm pretty sure it's called Deep Secret. And that has a similar kind of thing where, but instead of, like, going through these windows, you sort of walk uphill or downhill, and, like, the uphill worlds are, you know, the kind of happier, like, better worlds, and then the downhill worlds are, like, it's kind of in terms of how much magic there is. So, like, the super magical worlds are, you know, at the top of the hill, so to speak, and the really non-magical ones are, like, down the bottom of the hill, and our world is kind of a little bit in the middle, I guess. And so it's just this cool idea of, like, oh, I'm going to go to another world now. And you just sort of walk and you think about it and you, like, end up walking up this hill and you end up in a different world. I always found that really fun.
That,
so there you go.
Pretty cool. Kind of like
that is a really good series, actually. I recommend that a lot.
Very cool. See, I also, another book that has a really cool world that's realistic is The Daughter of Smoke and Bone is set in Prague. And I just love the idea of Prague. Like, it's so cool. And, like, if you look up pictures and stuff, like, it's just one of those very cool, very, very old cities that I love the feel of an old city. I also like books that are set in, like, Victorian England. I know that's probably really strange, but, like, that, the idea of Victorian England to me is just cool in a, I don't know, in a way. I really love the idea of it. And I'm sure there are fantasy worlds that I love, but I can't really, like, nothing is coming to mind for whatever reason. Like, I've got nothing. All I can think about are the dystopian worlds that I've read about recently, and I'm like, no, that's not going to work. No, there's nothing good about that one.
No, so move to the Hunger Games world. Okay, a real one that I like is The Diviners by Wilbur Bray. It's set in, like, 1920s New York.
Yes.
And it's, I mean, obviously there's, like, a supernatural element to that, but it's actually set in the real New York at that time, and that is really cool. So I would say that as, like, a real world setting. That's really fun. But again, like, I wouldn't read a book just because it was set in that period, you know. No. I like that because of what she did with it specifically.
Exactly. And, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I like books that are set there. Like, I don't mind. Some people have an issue when they get into a book and they find out it's, like, historically set or set in a certain kind of city that they don't relate to. That sort of thing doesn't bother me. Usually I'm drawn in even more by that. So that's kind of why I picked the places that I did. And they're kind of places that I can't wait to travel to. So
yeah, it just sounds like a European guidebook.
Pretty much. But I like the fantasy elements that are involved in the books or whatever, so that works for me too. Or, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
We reached the point in the show where it's like, yeah, whatever. All right. Considering it is finally May and things are starting to look summer-like around here, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the books that we are looking forward to this summer. And I have three that I'm looking forward to. And I'm looking at Marama's list, and she has two of the three that I have.
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about them. I just wanted it to be clear that I'm also excited about them. Yes,
I think everyone knows that we're excited about them. I'm really hoping that Landline is at BEA. Because I really want a copy. So, anyway, in case you didn't hear that whisper, I'm really looking forward to Silver Shadows by Rochelle Mead. It is the next book in the Bloodlines. The Bloodline series. It left off one of her major classic Rochelle Mead cliffhangers in the last book. So I'm kind of dying to see where that one ends up. Next, I'm waiting for Isla and her Happily Ever After, which I feel like I've been waiting an eternity for and can't wait to get my hands on. And then Landline by Rainbow Rowell, which, you know, Rainbow Rowell. Do I really need to say more? And one other one that I'm waiting for is called Forget Me, and it's by Kim Harrington, and it's this super cool like mystery thriller kind of thing, and it's set in all these really, really creepy places, and I'm so excited. I love a good creepy book. And she lives around here, and actually some of the places that she wrote about were, like, these old abandoned, like, amusement parks and stuff that are in the area. So they're, like, and they are truly creepy. So I'm very excited about reading that one as well. All right, Karen, you want to go next?
Sure. The first one on my list is Queen of the Tearling by Erica Johansson, and I don't think I really need to explain why. I don't even really have a solid reason other than it seems to be super highly anticipated by everybody, so I'm just really excited to finally be able to read it. And I hope it's
also really good. It is really good. You get to touch it, don't forget.
I did. And I teased Marima, and she got very angry at me.
That was the best text message ever.
I hate you both.
I will murder you. What is that? I will murder you.
I'm pretty sure she said, I will murder you to death, just to clarify. Yeah.
To make sure the murder wasn't enough.
That is accurate response.
What else do you have, Karen?
Okay, my other one is My Last Kiss by Bethany Neal. And this one just has a pretty cool premise. And the sort of log line to this book is, what if your last kiss was with the wrong boy? And it's basically about this girl who has died, and she kind of, like, she's sort of stuck here. And she has the suspicion that her death wasn't a suicide, as everybody assumes. So I guess, like, I mean, I haven't read it yet, but I guess that she doesn't remember what happened to her. And it's probably got some sort of interesting romance. I've been heard it described sort of like The Lovely Bones, which I really liked. So I think this could be a really cool twist on something similar to that. And then the other one is The Murder Complex by Lindsay Cummings. And it says, The Murder Complex is an action-packed, blood-soaked, futuristic debut thriller set in a world where the murder rate is higher than the birth rate. And because I'm weird and morbid, that just sounds really exciting to me.
That sounds like Kyle's favorite book of all time.
I was just going to say, like,
I think maybe I spend a little too much time with him in LA and he's like rubbing off on me.
Yeah. Oh boy. Seriously.
All right, Marima, what do you have on your list?
Okay, well, I would like to second basically everything else. So definitely Isla and Landline and Queen of the Teeling. And there are a couple others that I'm looking forward to, but I have to say most of the things I'm anticipating come out in like September, October. But there is a Gail Forman novella that's coming out in May, and it's from her Just One Day, Just One Year series, and it's about like what happens to the characters at the end of that series, which is fun. So I feel like a lot of the time the novellas fill in a moment that you didn't see kind of within the story that's already been told. So I like that this is sort of a little epilogue, and that's Just One Night. And then there's this other book called Fan Art that comes out in June, which looks really, really fun. And it's about this guy, Jamie, who like kind of, I guess he falls in love with his best friend, Mason. And all of the girls in their art class are like trying to set them up because they think it's hilarious. And he's trying to work out, you know, like, does he want to risk his friendship and, you know, all of this stuff. And it's just like a really understated way of telling an LGBT story, because that's really not the focus of what it's about, it sounds like. And I mean, reviews have been mixed, so I'll be interested to read it and see, but it sounds fun and I feel like there's a lot of potential there.
All right, so let's get into some fan feedback. When we talked last week about our favorite series and favorite books, we asked you guys the same thing on Twitter, and some of you had some interesting reactions. Some of you were like, that's very mean, and we know it wasn't our question, so we just like to throw it out there. We're all being, you know, have the mean put upon us together. It's a group effort here. So a couple of you wrote in and told us your favorite books. Leah says that she just finished reading Cinder by Marissa Mayer and really enjoyed it. So thanks for mentioning it. That's awesome. Nadia says her favorite series is Harry Potter. Her absolute favorite book, I don't know, I haven't found it yet. I have a lot of thieves, but none is ultimate. Very good.
That's super interesting, because like, how do you judge, you know,
the ultimate?
Yeah. Like, if you're not just comparing, I don't get it. I think that's cool, but like, you have to let us know what you're looking for. It's like, what's your dream, man? What are you looking for in your ultimate
What's your dream book? Can you describe it?
Right.
It is kind of interesting. Do you want to read a couple of the next ones?
Oh, sure. So Harry Potter was a popular theme here. Abby Lee, their favorite book is Emma by Jane Austen. Favorite series, Harry Potter, hands down. Mermaid Princess, their favorite book is Looking for Alaska by John Green, and favorite series also Harry Potter. And then Laura told us it was Mean. Favorite series, definitely Harry Potter. Favorite book, Can You Tie? No, you can't, but I'll read it anyway. Deathly Hallows and the sixth Vampire Academy book.
Very interesting. All right, and then we have Joey, who left a comment on the one of the posts. Three favorite books, Angelica Road by Melina Marchetta, The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, and Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. And it says, P.S., you guys have inspired me. I've started a book club with some girls I used to work with at A&R's. And then our first meeting is Sunday recommendations.
I would say you should do one of your favorite books, because you would already know a lot about it to talk about, and it would be like a good introduction.
That's true.
Like Fangirl would be really good. I feel like that would be a really good book club book.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about in Fangirl, and there, it's just, if you're a fan of books in general, I think Fangirl has a lot to offer on a lot of different levels, so that's always a great place to start.
Yeah, like if you're the kind of person that is in a book club, I feel like you'll like Fangirl.
This is true. Very, very true. But we can always give more suggestions at a later date, because I feel like
Well,
you
it
can always use
depends.
more than one. I know that depends on what other people like too, because I feel like with book clubs, you have to have a balance. That's why I've never joined a book club, because I'm like,
What are
I'm
you
kind of
talking
like,
about? This is a book club.
yeah, but we don't for well, okay, maybe we do a little bit, but I'm the one doing all the forcing, so it's fine. I'm like, wait, we don't force each other to read books we're not gonna like. That might
I'm
not
pretty
be
sure I have
100%
to
true.
review the last Mortal Instruments book, so I mean, I'm just saying. Not
Now,
high on my list. Now.
so I don't know,
It
but yeah, I
depends if
guess we
you're
are
into
kind of a book club,
fantasy or like,
right?
realistic. I think something like Fangirl or even On the Jellicoe Road, which is amazing, are a good place to start because it means that if someone isn't a big fantasy fan, it doesn't like immediately put them out of their comfort zone.
Right.
There's going to be very few people that are like, wow, I hate all books set in the real world. Whereas there are lots of people who are like, I hate all fantasy books. Those people are crazy, but they exist.
And I would actually say for maybe, like, I think starting with something like Fangirl is a really good one, but I would say for maybe a second one, pick a book that you guys haven't read and maybe isn't your usual style, because I started doing that once I got involved with book hype and I found out that there's a lot of books that I didn't think I would like that I really do like. And I think when you go out of your comfort zone like that, you're able to talk more about what you don't like and what you do like. And I think that would kind of foster a lot more discussion. And
Yeah,
sometimes you get
and
surprised too by what
yeah.
you, I mean, you may think you're not gonna like a book, and then you read it and you're like, oh, hey, that was surprisingly good. So.
Yeah, and if you're stuck, just read We Were Liars because it's the best book in
And
the world.
it's fast, so no one can really complain about wasting time on a book. Like,
Yeah.
and if they don't like it, I would highly reconsider my book club. I'm just saying, just throwing it out
Would
there.
spend my friendship. Like,
Oh,
expectations for this episode next week, and if everyone else doesn't like it, and I feel like Michal is gonna be like, I just wasn't into it, then I'm gonna be unsurprised but also mad about life.
yeah, that
So
might
I
not
was
be good.
in the comments, and they said that she did an impression of me last week. So thanks, guys.
Oh, it was very brief, but it was like she definitely had the Aussie accent going on. It was interesting. It wasn't half bad, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, get bad, haha.
Oh, no, I didn't even mean that. That's even better. Didn't even purposely do that one.
Michal is not good at the Australian accent, and I take offense at her impression of me.
It was better than it normally is. I'll give her that.
Oh, poor Mikal, she's not here to defend herself.
Yeah, but
Okay.
Karen, you've heard her
Okay,
accent. Yeah, it's
please.
not like I could do any better.
Yeah, maybe just stop doing it in general. Karen, someone in the comments was mad at you as well, because who? Let's see, Brock, who was the one that has been sending us all these mean questions anyway about like favorite books and stuff, said, "Karen, I have a bone to pick with you. I started reading book one of The Lost Years of Merlin as promised, and was looking ahead at the other books and noticed that there are 11 freaking books in this series. I think I may be in over my head, but we'll see. I also noticed that several of your other favorite series have a crap ton of books in them. Couldn't settle for a nice trilogy, could you?"
Okay, Brock, you're our new favorite person. Besides the mean questions, we're gonna let it go.
Thanks. Yeah, now we're just getting the commenters to hate on me. No, that's actually a really good point because this was especially true when I was younger, not necessarily now because I've kind of branched out into more of the standalones, but a lot of my favorite series have tons of books in them because I used to hate stopping a series, so I would always go for the ones that literally had the most books in them. There's like another one too, Daughters of the Moon, I think it was called. I haven't read the whole thing, but that one has like 13 books in it, and yeah, that's definitely a problem that I have, and I'm sorry.
Like the Babysitters Club or something, because there are like 100 books in that series.
I never read those, but I did really like Animorphs, and there's like a million of those too.
Yeah, right. So just something else that there was good one, Karen.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. And of course, please send your comments, thoughts, any anecdotes you may have about books to us, either through our Twitter at Book Hype, or leave messages on any of the book posts or the podcast posts, and we'll clearly be happy to read and joke about them because you guys are fantastic listeners and commenters. So, as always, thanks for listening, and I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Mara.